upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. This week's schedule is a little bit disrupted because of a meeting that I have to attend and prepare for on Saturday. But I want to pick up a story from yesterday, an important one, called Big Bro, No Internet Surfing in China Without First Scanning Your Face. This is a new development in China. The article states the Chinese regime announced a new rule which will require residents to pass a facial recognition test in order to apply for an internet connection via smartphone or computer. The rule will be implemented from December 1, 2019. In addition, no cell phones or landline number can be transferred to another person privately. This is an upgraded restriction after the Chinese Ministry of Industry and Information Technology required all applicants to present a valid ID and personal information to register for a cell phone or for a landline number since January 2015. This reminds you a little bit of gun control measures trying to get traction in America, where there's a background check on everybody. You have to go through a litmus test to find out whether you're worthy or qualified to own a firearm. And now in China, they've applied the no person left behind mentality to its all-controlling social engineering. It will indeed be illegal to get access to the internet without having your face scanned into the national database. This kind of mentality is sweeping the world, by the way. Expect it to show up in other countries soon. This will also allow China to completely track all of your search activity and all your internet activity. If you have a smartphone and you're accessing the internet from the smart device, you will be tracked 100% on everything you do. This is China. This is technocracy. People need to wake up and realize what's going on, not only there, but the same thing is happening here. The first story today was titled, How Google Search Engine Determines Winners and Losers. This is a rather sad story because Google has become the 800-pound gorilla in the living room, and he's sitting on your couch and my couch too, for that matter. What Google does or doesn't do with its very mysterious search engine algorithms will determine who lives or dies in the business world and in the social world as well. I commented on this article, run by technocrat mindset, Google practices its science of social engineering at every level, putting companies in a position to live or die by search engine placement of ads and keywords. If you run afoul, Google can crush you. This article states, where's the best place to hide a body? Well, the second page of a Google search. The gallows humor shows that people rarely look beyond the first few results of a search, but Lee Griffin isn't laughing. In the 13 years since he co-founded British price comparison website GoCompare, the 41-year-old has tried to keep his company at the top of search results, doing everything from using a, quote, for dummies guide in the early days to hiring a team of engineers, marketers, and mathematicians. That's put him on the front lines of a battle challenging the dominance of Alphabet Inc.'s Google in the search market, with regulators in the U.S. and across Europe taking a closer look. Most of the sales at GoCompare, which helps customers find deals on everything from car and travel insurance to energy plans, comes from Google searches, making its appearance at the top critical. With Google, whose search market share is more than 80%, frequently changing its algorithms, buying ads has become the only way to ensure a top spot on the page. Companies like GoCompare have to outbid competitors for paid spots even when customers search for their brand name. Griffin said in an interview, Google's brought on as this thing that wanted to serve information to the world. But actually, what it's doing is to show you information that people have paid it to show you. GoCompare is far from the only one to suffer from Google search dominance. John Lewis, a high-end British retailer, last month alluded to the rising cost of climbing up in Google search results. In the U.S., Interactive Corp., which owns internet services like Tinder and ride-hailing company Lyft, have signaled Google's stranglehold on the market. The clamor from companies has prompted the U.K. competition watchdog to study online platforms and digital advertising in July, aiming to examine the market power of companies like Google over online marketing. The European Union has been trying to rein in Google, fining the company 1.5 billion euros this year for thwarting advertising rivals. In the U.S., there's a rising chorus of voices on the political left and right demanding Google be cut down to size. Somehow, the case of GoCompare shows just how difficult it is to win the search game. GoCompare is known locally for its offbeat ads, where an opera singer belts out its name in restaurants, taxis, and more controversially, crawls out of a flipped car in a recreation of an accident. When customers look for the company's name after seeing an ad or type in an inquiry for auto insurance, what appears is a combination of paid advertisements, Google's own blurbs, and then so-called natural search results, a list of what the tech giant deems are the most reliable sources of the information. But even ranking highly on natural search results can be costly. The way the algorithm works is constantly changing, and you don't get insight into it, said Lexi Mills, chief executive officer of Shift 6, a marketing consulting firm that helps clients improve their search results. The people who get to optimize tend to be the people with the most money. Nowhere is Google's power more evident and potentially damaging to businesses than in the market for branded keywords. This is where businesses buy ads based on their brand names. So GoCompare bids on the word GoCompare. And when people search for that, Google runs an ad at the top of the results, usually linking to the company's website. Some businesses say they have to buy these ads, whatever the cost, because rivals can bid on the keywords too. If GoCompare decides not to bid for its own brand, Google can legally sell the ad placements with its name to a competitor, with the top bidders getting the best spots on the page and taking away customers. This seems to be an odd place to be that I have to bid on my own brand, said Griffin. When the company confronted Google about it, the tech giant said, quote, tell your competitors to stop bidding on you, close quote. Well, you can see how Google is using its search dominance to influence how companies can attract customers, even to their own brand. The result is, of course, companies have to pay boatloads of money to Google to keep their name at the top of the list. And without any restrictions on competitors using and bidding for your own brand name, the price just keeps getting higher and higher. The next story was written by Walter E. Williams. The title of the article is Idiotic Environmental Predictions. The story caught my eye because Walter E. Williams is a very good conservative thinker, and he's entered into the argument here over the eco-apocalyptic predictions that we've seen in the past many years. I wrote at the top of this article, the ugly underlying philosophy of scientism has inbred upon itself when it claims that science is the only source of truth about reality. Its result is not only unscientific, but anti-scientific, as it drives itself to justify its own fallacies at any cost. Williams wrote, the Competitive Enterprise Institute has published a new paper, Wrong Again, 50 Years of Failed Eco-Apocalyptic Predictions. Keep in mind that many of the grossly wrong environmentalist predictions were made by respected scientists and government officials. My question for you is this. If you were around at the time, how many government restrictions and taxes would you have urged to avoid the predicted calamity? As reported in the New York Times, August 1969, Stanford University biologist Dr. Paul Ehrlich warned, quote, the trouble with almost all environmental problems is that by the time we have enough evidence to convince people, you're dead. we must realize that unless we're extremely lucky, everybody will disappear in a cloud of blue steam in 20 years. In 2000, Dr. David Viner, senior research scientist at University of East Anglia's Climate Research Unit, predicted that in a few years, winter snowfall would become a very rare and exciting event. Children just aren't going to know what snow is, he said. In 2004, the U.S. Pentagon warned President George W. Bush that major European cities would be beneath rising seas. Britain will be plunged into a Siberian climate by 2020. In 2008, Al Gore predicted that the polar ice cap would be gone in a mere 10 years. A U.S. Department of Energy study led by the U.S. Navy predicted the Arctic Ocean would experience an ice-free summer by 2016. In May 2014, French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius declared during a joint appearance with Secretary of State John Kerry that, quote, we have 500 days to avoid climate chaos. Peter Gunter, professor of North Texas State University, predicted in the spring 1970 issue of Living Wilderness, quote, demographers agree almost unanimously on the following grim timetable. By 1975, widespread famines will begin in India. These will be spread by 1990 to include all of India, Pakistan, China, the Near East, and Africa. By the year 2000, or conceivably sooner, South and Central America will exist under famine conditions. By the year 2000, 30 years from now, the entire world, with the exception of Western Europe, North America, and Australia, will be in famine. Ecologist Kenneth Watt's 1970 prediction was, quote, if present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990, but 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. He added, this is about twice what it would take to put us into an ice age. Mark J. Perry, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and professor of economics and finance at the University of Michigan's Flint campus, cites 18 spectacularly wrong predictions made around the time of the first Earth Day in 1970. This time, it's not about weather. Harrison Brown, a scientist at the National Academy of Sciences, published a chart in Scientific American that looked at metal reserves and estimated that humanity would run out of copper shortly after 2000. Lead, zinc, tin, gold, and silver would be gone before 1990. Kenneth Watts said, by the year 2000, if present trends continue, we will be using up crude oil at such a rate that there won't be any more crude oil. Well, at some point, this insanity just needs to stop. The headline graphic posted with this story is a picture of AOC holding up a sign, the world will end in 12 years, and she's shouting in big red letters, run! Standing next to her is a picture of Chicken Little holding up his smaller sign, the sky is falling. And he's thinking, to himself, of course, and they call me crazy? Well, thank you, Walter Williams, for bringing this to our attention. The last story is absolutely pathetic. It involves the state of California again. And there have been many stories about California in the pages of Technocracy News and Trends in the past couple of years. And the reason is they've taken a swan dive into the Green New Deal and into environmental thinking, and they're transforming their state, but not into a utopia. They're transforming it into a third world banana republic. This is really pathetic. And apparently nobody in the government puts the blame on this decline on themselves or the government structure that's been created in California. Rather, they blame it on other people, other things, other circumstances. There's absolutely no accountability. It's just amazing. The story states, officials at Pacific Gas and Electric Company on Wednesday called for the public to let employees do their job safely amid frustrations that a widespread California power shutdown after authorities reported that a bullet was fired at one of the energy provider's vehicles. Now, what's happening here is that PG&E has cut power to millions of people in California across the board. That means homeowners as well as commercial institutions. They're doing this, they say, to avoid a wildfire situation where fires might be started by sparks from lines. so they're arbitrarily cutting power across the state. This has created a massive amount of anger of citizens toward PG&E. Obviously, they're very upset. This is their livelihood, because nothing runs without energy. And PG&E, unfortunately, is the only provider for these areas, so they have no choice. There's no other competitor that they can go to. So now it's degraded into a situation where people are actually firing weapons at PG&E trucks in anger and frustration. And the article continues, the plea came the same day that police say a threatening letter was reported at a PG&E facility as the utility switched off electricity to hundreds of thousands of people. The planned outage, the biggest in the state's history, announced as a measure to reduce wildfire risk, comes as PG&E faces massive liabilities for starting a blaze that killed 85 people and destroyed the town of Paradise last year. We realize and understand the impact and the hardship as a result of this decision that we've made, Sameet Singh, Vice President of PG&E's Community Wildfire Safety Program, said in a news conference, but employees and contractors have families that live in your communities. They have friends that are members of your community, Singh added. So let's just ensure their safety as well as they are doing this work in the interest of your safety. Power companies worried about California's devastating wildfires are increasingly turning to unplanned shutdowns. PG&E says this latest, usually disruptive measure, which could last several days, was prompted by the dry winds like those that helped fuel disastrous fires before. The outages have upset customers, closed schools and workplaces, and raised fears that people who rely on electricity for medical needs could be caught unprepared. Some have questioned this week's shutdown, which PG&E expects to affect 800,000 people, as excessive. And by the way, it's exceeded a million people at this point. About 650,000 customers were expected to lack power Wednesday evening, according to the company. This cannot be something that can be acceptable nor long-term, says Senator Jerry Hill, a Democrat, told the Los Angeles Times, saying power shutdowns should be surgical. This is third world, and we are not, he added. I've got news for Jerry Hill. You are third world. You can be sure that California has just sunk so low as to legitimately be called a third world country. The article continues, lawmakers have also accused PG&E of fueling the risks that prompted the shutdown with poor management and maintenance. Governor Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, said in a news conference Wednesday that he was outraged by the outage because it didn't have to happen. Affected residents who spoke to the Washington Post blame PG&E too. It's ridiculous. All political, one Napa Valley man, Greg Bowman, said. This company is so screwed up. PG&E officials are quick to acknowledge people's anger, but maintain they are prioritizing people's safety and balancing dueling threats. The story reports that in San Francisco, staff members erected a barricade in front of the company's headquarters while citing, quote, the safety of our employees, the San Francisco Chronicle reported. According to the old adage that as California goes, so goes the nation, this should be a wake-up call for the rest of America. Is this where you want to go? Is this what you want to end up being like? I don't think anybody's going to answer yes to that question, but California is pushing the envelope, and unfortunately, they're also pushing the Green New Deal. Most all of these policies that California has adopted to arrive at this situation were created out of radical leftist environmentalism that prevented the harvesting of trees in the forest, of responsibly maintaining the forest, and now they're worried about fires, and now they're worried about power outages, and there's a good possibility that people are actually going to die as a result of this power outage. Store shelves have been cleaned out, mini marts, gas stations, etc., have been shut down. This is absolute insanity. The political leadership in California needs to take responsibility for bringing these policies in the first place. And the only way they're going to get out of the situation that they're in is to reverse those policies and return to some level of sanity and a sound economic system and a sound social system that will support the millions of people in California. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.